Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We're here to talk about the issues that can empower us to live a longer and healthier life, but also social issues, environmental issues, that can present us with the facts. Hard to get the facts that are honest and accurate, not biased and tipped to one ideology versus another today. The reality is that there are good people, honest people, working everywhere, in the mainstream and alternative media. The trouble is they don't control it. It's just like a hospital where you have good physicians and good nurses, but unfortunately the hospital is for profit, and every single procedure in there, needed or not, is going to rack up a bill to where you come out of a hospital for a simple procedure, you could be looking at tens of thousands of dollars. Now, you would think that with all Americans going broke, shouldn't we have universal health care? Of course we should. And had Bernie Sanders been elected, we would. Bernie has some things I would challenge him on, but he also has things, like Ron Paul, that I would agree with. On his domestic policies, I believe that he's got some good, strong qualifications that could help all Americans. But on his foreign policy, and especially his pro-Israel and anti-Palestinian policy, no. He's going to run again in 2020 as a Democrat, not a third party. I'll give you some ideas about what I believe will be the likely outcome and what we who are independents and or progressives who see that both the Republican and Democratic parties have been hijacked and true liberals and true conservatives' needs have been abrogated to the dustbin. So more on that later. I'm going to talk about that also today. Now, you'll particularly like this if you are a self-employed person or you own a little business and you have a millennial. Now, not all millennials are this way. I have some outstanding millennials working for me, real strong work ethics, but then they're the minority. So this is an interview with a just typical one. And then I'm sure you've heard people say things that in retrospect you think, well, that just doesn't sound right. And I came across a piece about what white liberals at Berkeley, considered the most liberal college in the United States University, had to say about black people. And then everyone that you hear in the first part is white and young, college students, and a professor or two. But then the interviewer goes to Harlem and asks the same identical questions, only to African Americans. Now, it's just one piece of a puzzle, but it's still important that we not overlook it and realize how even those who consider themselves liberal could also be imbued with a certain amount of conditioned racism. And also, for those of you who've been listening to the mainstream media, Hollywood, Amy Goodman on Democracy Now!, the only privatized asset in the history of Pacifica. What a coup that's never discussed. They all supported the White Helmets and the documentary made about them. Won an Academy Award for short documentary. Well, we have been opposed to that, and we've given you the facts by people on the ground in war zones showing this is actually a terrorist organization, supported by the United States by over $100 million a year, no less a terrorist organization. I'm going to bring you today, if time permits, about a 7-minute overview of everything that proves they're a terrorist organization. And also Robert Perry, who's been on the show dozens of times, has passed over the weekend, had a stroke. This was his second stroke. And we were informed by his son. He is just one of those outstanding investigative reporters. He's broken so many stories. And so we're going to give you just one of the dozens of interviews, a 4-minute clip of me interviewing Robert Perry on WikiLeaks and the CIA cyber attacks, if time permits. I also want to keep time aside for some special announcements and talk back. So we have a lot to share today, but we always start with the latest on health and healing. From the University of Connecticut, there is a study that talks about aerobic exercise, meaning really getting into it. Biking, swimming, jogging, running. And how it helps your brain, how it can delay Alzheimer's. Now, Alzheimer's is, and you all know this, it's a brain disorder that destroys memory and thinking skills over time. It is the most common form of dementia in older adults, according to the University of Connecticut. And there's presently, in orthodoxy, there is no cure for the condition. But there are some very successful treatments in the alternative field. And today, with a minimum of 5 million Americans living with Alzheimer's, it's now the sixth leading cause of death in the United States. But mind you, this is principally from the greatest generation, meaning we baby boomers' parents who were born before or during the Great Depression. Those are the people mainly suffering, but my generation's beginning to suffer because of their lifestyle. When I go home for a reunion, I do not recognize almost any of the people I went to school with. And I could see this going clear back in every 5 years and every 10 years there was a reunion. And they take a photograph, and then I would just look at the photograph. And you could see how people weren't exercising, how they wouldn't change their diets, how they simply accepted that life was without a whole lot of opportunity except for whatever you were able to master early and you stuck with it and that's it. So nothing changes. Well, there's over 65 million of us and we're next in line for Alzheimer's. And right now, most of my generation suffers from either memory loss, partial memory loss, or dementia, and a small percentage suffer from Alzheimer's. So exactly how are we supposed to help all these people? We won't be able to. Our entire medical system, healthcare system, will be overwhelmed. There are solutions. Now, I'm going to get to those solutions because this year, as soon as I complete a major original investigative report, the one I mentioned, by the way, that report is not the one on vaccines. That's just the most current challenge that I'm working on is getting information about for people to question the safety and efficacy of vaccines. Whether you choose to vaccinate or not is your business. I don't tell people to vaccinate or not vaccinate. I just say be informed about what they're not telling you. Then if you choose to, that's your business. If you choose not to, good for you. That's still your business. But the big investigation, the one that there's going to be a whole lot of pushback on, I'll have done in about 2 months. Then I'm going to do a big worldwide health support group over the internet on reversing brain aging. More on that in the future. In any case, geriatric experts, that means the anti-aging experts, now can at least show that exercising can improve brain health in older adults, older meaning over the age of 50. But they're saying on the bottom end, 75 minutes, and the top end, 150 minutes, I would say better 200 to 300 minutes a week would be more ideal. So if you're exercising aerobically, let's say 45 minutes a day, there's a very good chance you're going to slow down the aging of the brain and have your cognition last a lot longer. This article was published in the Journal of the American Geriatric Society. From the University of Missouri, recent research showed that blueberries outperform radiation in killing cervical cancer cells. How about that? I can remember at the very beginning of my career as a journalist going to Washington and interviewing the head of the National Cancer Institute. And he was very open. I found him to be a very good person. And at the time, there was a Dr. Dean Burke. And he was one of the founders of the National Cancer Institute. He showed me dozens of studies that they had done at the National Cancer Institute showing how vitamins like vitamin D and vitamin A and other nutrients, vitamin C, could help with cancer. However, even though they had positive results, all that work was swept aside because chemotherapy and radiation were the ones being pushed by the sponsors. And he told me, director of the National Cancer Institute told me that natural therapies are not going to be in anyone's medicine cabinet in the foreseeable future. It's all going to be chemotherapy. Well, now it's changing slightly. According to the University of Missouri and the CDC, over 12,000 women in the United States are diagnosed with cervical cancer each year and are told that they will need surgery and chemotherapy and radiation as a common orthodox treatment. Unfortunately, most cancer patients are never told about better results from consuming blueberry compounds. Now, recent research has focused on attempts to identify these radiosensitizers, or non-toxic natural substances that can make radiation more effective. And you guessed it, blueberry extract is emerging at the forefront with a new study showcasing its ability to work along with radiation in combating cervical cancer. So that's the newest. In fact, the group that received blueberry extract decreased by 25%. That's a big decline in cancer cells. So that's just by itself. Now, that's without curcumin and modified citrus pectin extract and so many other natural anti-cancer agents. If you're on a really good natural anti-cancer protocol, there's no reason that you couldn't reasonably expect to see some remarkable improvement. And by the way, the good news is, Sal, who you heard a couple weeks ago on this program, who came to a retreat just recently, a couple months ago, with end-stage lung cancer. He couldn't breathe. He was labored. They didn't even operate. It was so advanced, so far gone. He was suggested hospice care, or put his life in order. They said at the very longest he could expect would be 6 months. Well, it's now 9 months. And more importantly, they said that there's nothing else that would work. Well, maybe they didn't know anything else that would work, but Saul's been on a protocol, and lo and behold, he no longer needs oxygen. He's walking upright. He is healthy. He is happy. And his cancer is regressing. It is no longer in stage 4 terminal. And instead of saying, "What'd you do? Can we have some more information?" There was no curiosity there, just kind of like a phenomena. Now, Sal is continuing with his protocols, and we're going to have him back on when he has his next set of medical studies to see what stage he's at, how he's improving. But we just spoke to him yesterday, Lou Anne Panessi did, and he is doing terrific. But again, you would never know that someone with an end-stage medically irreversible condition was improving, like with Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, seen all this, all with natural, non-toxic methods. So blueberries for cancer. And this was also another study on blueberries and cancer was done at Florida State University as well. And the authors there noted that blueberries inhibit the production of pro-inflammatory molecules, thereby helping to defeat the formation of malignant tumors. In fact, the authors credited blueberries with combating oxidative stress and DNA damage, increasing programmed cell death, where the cell commits suicide, and reducing cancer cell proliferation. Plus, other studies have shown that anthocyanidins, antho, A-N-T-H-O, cy, C-Y, anidins, A-N-I-N-S, in blueberries, they're also in cherries and grapes, show the progression of cancer by, slow it down by blocking this angiogenesis. And that's, angiogenesis means the creation of new blood vessels to nourish tumors. Well, you want to stop that. You don't want the cancer to be able to be fed, so you, angiogenesis kills that, and blueberries did that. In a review published in Antioxidants, researchers credited blueberries with inhibiting the growth of both colon cancer and prostate cancer cells. And finally, studies have shown that diets supplemented with blueberries reduce the size of tumors in rats and esophageal cancer. So, just new information, and that's important. Now, from the University of Guelph in Canada, they ask a question: what is better for preventing cancer, omega-3 from fish or from flaxseed? Good question. The omega-3s from fish pack a stronger punch than flaxseed and other oils when it comes to cancer prevention, according to this first ever study. And, quote, this study is the first to compare the cancer-fighting potency of plant versus marine-derived omega-3s on breast tumor development. There is evidence that both omega-3s from plants and marine sources are protective against cancer, and we wanted to determine which form was more effective. Now, there are actually three types of omega-3 fatty acids used for your immune response. One is ALA, which is the linolenic acid, and then the EPA, and then the DHA. And the ALA is plant-based and found in such flaxseed oils and hemp and avocado and walnuts. And then you have your DHA and EPA, which are found in fish. This was published in the Journal of Nutritional Biochemistry, and so both are good, but a little leg up on it is from fish. And when someone recently said, Gary, why do you challenge so many pharmaceutical drugs? My answer was simple. Because by standards that should be met for all drugs, they simply don't make the standard. Many drugs are passed. Representatives from the pharmaceutical company making the drugs frequently sit on the FDA or the CDC's advisory boards, green-lighting the drugs. Do you want a drug in your system? Because some drugs could save your life. But do you want a drug in your system that could actually take your life? Here's the latest on why I do this. This was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, the current issue. The research was done at Brigham and Women's Hospital and the Mayo Clinic and Yale University. Quote, over 30% of all FDA-approved drugs have grave and deadly side effects. Whoa. In fact, that's close to one-third of all drugs approved by the FDA are found to have safety problems. In fact, the Journal of the American Medical Association report stated that these safety issues, known as, quote, post-market safety events, are common after FDA approval, highlighting the importance of continuous monitoring of the safety of novel therapeutics throughout the life cycle, end quote. In fact, every single day in the United States, 1,000 people are treated in emergency departments for a single FDA-approved drug, opiates. And opiate drugs, overdoses now kill more people annually than the number of Americans who died in the Vietnam War. And that was in the entire war. This is in just 1 year. However, it's not only opiates. There's overdoses of all types. So over 100,000 instances a year. And that's a whole lot of people getting sick. So yes, you should be concerned about the safety of the drugs you're taking, but you would think you wouldn't be as concerned as, let's say, the FDA, the CDC, but you have no idea how politicized they become. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 20 minutes into our program. I'm going to take a brief break. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We have a lot of program to do today, plus a commentary, if time permits, from Chris Hedges. But I thought you'd appreciate this little short interview between a person wanting to hire a millennial and the millennial wanting the job.
Amy, it says you are trained in technology. That's very good. Are you adept at Excel?
No.
PowerPoint?
No.
Publisher?
Not really.
Exactly in what area of technology are you proficient?
Snapchat, Pinterest, Instagram, Vine, Twitter. You know the big ones.
I'm surprised you didn't say Facebook.
That's for old people, like my parents. That's funny.
Well, Amy, when you're working for me, you have to have those kind of research skills because I'll send you things for you to comb through and get the answers and send them to me. So for that, you got to be really good at technology.
For stuff like that, no problem. I'll just ask Siri.
You'll just ask Siri?
You know, Siri tell me this, Siri find me that. We're all good getting you the answers.
Tell Siri I want you ready to go at 8 sharp each and every morning.
I don't understand.
What don't you understand?
What you just said.
You don't understand be ready to go?
No. You said 8, right?
Yes.
8, like in the morning, 8?
Yes, in the morning.
Yeah. That kind of doesn't work for me. Who gets up at 8?
I do.
I Skype with my French boyfriend in Paris until like 3 in the morning. I don't even get to Starbucks until like 10, where I order my grande chai tea latte, 3 pump skim milk, light water, 2% foam, extra hot, but not too hot. So if it's okay, I work best in the morning at 10:45.
Wow. Amy, I don't think we're going to be a good fit.
Why are you so negative? I can sense your hostilities, and right now I am not feeling very safe. I've been here for over 5 minutes, and the only nice thing you have said to me was nice resume, which I typed all night for this meeting with you. You've given me no guidance, no validation, no encouragement, no supervision. Is there an HR director somewhere?
HR director?
Yes, I need to speak to someone. I may have to take off today as a mental health day.
Take the day off? Amy, look at me. You don't work here.
Are you firing me?
Okay, yes.
Well, that actually is... I actually have had too many interviews like that. And for any of you who've ever tried hiring some, fortunately, there's some good ones also. Now, this is one that gives me a lot of concern. Not because people's intent, because I just think these people are so absolutely disconnected from reality that they don't realize how racist they are by their conditioning. But that's my personal opinion. I'm interested in yours. Listen up. These are what white liberal students, they're all white liberal, at Berkeley on campus and professors have to say about black people. And then you go to Harlem, and then we hear what black people have to say about this.
Do you have an opinion of voter ID laws?
Yeah, they're usually pretty racist and they're bad.
I think voter ID laws are a way to perpetuate racism.
Would you go as far as say they're, those laws are racist?
For sure.
Do you think it suppresses the African American vote?
Definitely.
Tell us how.
Because they're less likely to have state IDs.
Minority voters are less likely to have the kinds of IDs that have been described or required.
These type of people don't live in areas with easy access to DMVs or other places where they can get identification.
You can always get IDs you do over the internet. Does that also make it difficult for black people in particular?
Yeah, you have to have access to the internet. You have to be able to pay an internet service provider for certain fees.
Do you think that's harder for black people to go online?
Well, I feel like they don't have the knowledge of how it works.
A lot of people have smartphones, but you might not have data.
For most of the communities, they don't really know what is out there just because they're not aware or they're not informed.
I also think there's a repression of black voting with
how if you're a convicted felon, like, you're not allowed to vote and everything. And when you look at swing states like Florida, that's a huge population of the like African Americans.
Now I'm here in East Harlem to ask black people their thoughts on what you just heard. Do you have ID normally? You carry ID around?
Yes, I have state ID.
Do you carry ID?
Yes, I do.
Do you know anybody who, any black person who doesn't carry ID?
No. Everyone that I know has an ID. Why would they think we don't have ID?
That's a lie. Why would they say that?
Do you have ID?
Yes.
Because I have my ID and my friends have their ID. So like, we know what we need to carry around.
Everybody that I know have ID. Like, that's one of the things you need to walk around with New York with, ID.
Do you know any black adult who does not have ID?
No, I don't.
Is it a weird thing to even say that?
Yes, it is.
What is this, some type of trick candy canvas?
I like know, that? Right? That's the only thing I brought with me.
Those are legit IDs. I heard a lot also that black people can't figure out how to get to the DMV.
Really?
Is that what does that say to you?
I know it's that, on 25th Street.
Do you know where the ID, the DMV is right here?
It's on 125th Street and 3rd Avenue, I believe.
You know how to get there?
Yeah.
Do you have a problem getting there if you have to get there? I know these sound like silly questions. You know how to get the DMV?
Of course.
You know where it is?
Yes.
You can get there?
Uh-huh.
No problem.
No problem.
Just checking.
Okay.
And I also heard a lot that black people, especially poor black people, have no access to the internet, can't figure out how to use the internet.
That's just stupidity, honestly. Everybody has access to the internet. Even a little kid can figure out how to work the internet.
I had access to the internet for years.
You know how to use it properly,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I do it at work. So, of course, I know how to use it. Smart. My kids know how to use it. They all have iPads, iPods, whatever.
Your phone has data?
Mm-hmm.
You can actually
unlimited.
Unlimited data?
Mm-hmm.
I use my phone as a hotspot.
What does that say to you for the people who have this perception of black people?
They're pretty much ignorant. That's what my thought process is.
I just think that's ignorant.
Ignorant.
Ignorant. That's the word I'm hearing.
Ignorant. Very, very ignorant.
Does it sound racist for somebody to say that?
I think it is a little racist because, you know, you're putting people in a category and you have no idea what you're talking about.
Maybe a little bit of racist in it, but like I said, I think it's more stupidity and ignorance.
You're judging somebody, like, well, you're judging them because they're black, saying that they don't got it.
What people are they talking to? Who are these people talking to?
Do you have a problem that if you go to vote and they say, can we please see your ID to make sure you are who you say you are? Are you
love cool? Showing my ID.
You got no problem with that?
Nope.
Would you have a problem if when you go to vote, if they say, can we please just see your ID to make sure you are who you say you are? Do you have an issue with that?
No.
Would you have a problem if there was a rule where you had to show your ID in order to vote?
I don't think so. No.
Would you have an issue if there was a rule saying you got to show your ID before you vote?
No.
Are you cool with that?
Yeah.
Okay, that's one piece of a puzzle. There are clearly challenges to voter registration schemes in the United States and have been for some time. But it's taken one snapshot and looking at how people perceive other people's capacities, then what other judgments may they have about those individuals without ever meeting them, without ever living with them, without ever questioning their own false notions, aside and separate from anything else that is wrong within voter registration. I just find it particularly alarming. Your thoughts. Talk back coming up in a few minutes, 888-874-4888. Also, historically, at least from the middle 1930s on, the Democratic Party has been the refuge of liberal ideologies. It was supposed to be for family, unions, that in common, protecting our environment, making sure that there was no manipulation or usurping our powers and rights by special interest groups. But everything has been just the opposite. Once again, this irony. For example, when I heard Hillary Clinton call Trump's supporters at least half, you're talking about 33 million people, and how would she know which ones were deplorables? And then the whole thing picked up like, yeah, if you voted for Trump, you're deplorable. Did anyone ever think that one of the reasons people voted for Trump was not because of who he represents himself to be, but because of all the promises made by the good Democrat liberals, Hillary and Bill Clinton, and then Barack Obama? And what actually happened? One, Barack Obama put more African Americans in prison than any person in American history, took away more welfare, did not support schools except charter schools, supported NAFTA and took jobs away, and did everything they could to court the leaders of unions, but then betrayed the rank and file of unions. In fact, if you go throughout the Middle West and talk with people who were once hardcore Democrats, you'll find that they no longer wanted anything to do with the Democratic Party because how many times they've been promised and then lied to. So they voted for Trump thinking, yeah, he's the worst of two evils. But at least he's the evil, may do something, and the other one we know won't do anything for us because they've had an opportunity and did not. So I think that how we frame an argument, how we ask a question, how we interpret an answer is important. And the Democrats no longer can validly say they represent true ideals of liberalism, nor can the Republicans say they truly represent the ideals of conservatism. And that's why so many former liberal and conservatives are now independents. Had they joined together, they could have created a third party that would have been more powerful and more humanistic and moral, ethical, than the Democrats or Republicans combined. And by the way, there are more independent voters today than there are Democrats or Republicans. So just something to think about when we start labeling people and then we castigate people based upon the label we give them. And we really shouldn't be doing that because it just shows our own individual lack of awareness of what it is to be the other person. I want to share this clip on the White Helmets with you. We're the, to my knowledge, we're the only radio program and the only radio network, progressive radio network, to look for the truth about our interventions in Libya, in Syria, in Ukraine, in Honduras, and around the world. And as history has now shown, we were right in all cases, and the others were wrong, including so-called liberal stations promoting neoliberalism and a warmongering agenda. This is the good work of a Canadian, Beasley, on this. Please listen.
The condensed case against the White Helmets. White Helmets were started and largely trained not in Syria, but in Turkey and Jordan, by James Lemessurier, a former British military intelligence officer who went on to become Vice President for Special Projects at the Olive Group, a private mercenary organisation that has since merged with Blackwater, or Academy, into what is now known as Constellis Holdings. White Helmets receive substantial funding from the United States, the United Kingdom, and the European Union, at least $150 million over 3 years, from the same parties that are supporting the rebels or terrorists. No political ties? White Helmets only ever operated in territory controlled by terrorist groups like Al-Nusra Front, ISIS, and Nur al-Din Zinki, notorious for filming themselves torturing and beheading a 12-year-old boy. When those groups are forced to move, the White Helmets move with them, in the same buses, as when they abandoned East Aleppo. The White Helmets' leader, Ra'id Saleh, is tied to extremists, a fact acknowledged even by the State Department's Mark Toner. Saleh was actually deported from the US out of Dulles Airport in April 2016, with no reason being disclosed. He is a close colleague of Mustafa Al-Haj Youssef, another White Helmets leader whose social media accounts show him openly declaring allegiance to Ahrar al-Sham, calling for unity with al-Nusra, advocating the shelling and execution of civilians, and other equally charming practices. Actually, a recent survey of social media activity carried out by the Syrian War blog has conservatively identified 65 White Helmet operatives who have professed their membership of, or alliance with, extremist groups like Ahrar al-Sham and El Nusra Front. The White Helmet Group in East Aleppo was established by the president of the UK-funded East Aleppo Council, Abdulaziz Maghrabi, often photographed with, offering support for, and maintaining active militant membership with terrorist groups Abu Amara and al-Nusra Front. White helmets in Idlib were photographed taking part in demonstrations and calling for the burning and destruction of the towns Kafraya and Fuar, which resisted occupation by the terrorists and suffered a siege that deprived their citizens of food, water and medicine, in addition to attacks that killed some 1,300 residents. White helmets also participated in luring children evacuated from these towns off their buses to their deaths by a truck bomb in an event known as the Rashidin Massacre. Muawiya Hassan Agha was present at Rashidin, and he later became infamous for his involvement in the execution of two prisoners of war in Aleppo. For this rogue bad appleness, he was supposedly fired from the White Helmets, although he was later photographed still with them. He has also been photographed celebrating victory with al-Nusra Front in Idlib. There have been at least three other executions on video that show White Helmet involvement, not just being present and immediately cleaning up, but celebrating, mistreating bodies, and otherwise not acting in a manner consistent with being a neutral humanitarian group. Videos show White Helmets participating in al-Nusra Front operations, for example, joining in the beating and encirclement of a Syrian civilian, thoroughly mingling in with heavily armed al-Nusra terrorists. The main White Helmet centre in East Aleppo was integrated into the al-Nusra Front compound and was adorned with a variety of graffiti and flags affirming the White Helmet affiliation to various terrorist groups, but predominantly al-Nusra Front. Numerous civilian witnesses from Aleppo were unfamiliar with the term White Helmets, but knew the group as the al-Nusra Front Civil Defence and reported its participation in executions and atrocities. On multiple occasions, the White Helmets have been exposed staging rescue scenes for both photo and video, recycling images in multiple propaganda pieces. Swedish Doctors for Human Rights analysed a White Helmets video report and concluded, quote, "The measures inflicted upon those children, some of them lifeless, are bizarre, non-medical, non-life-saving, and even counterproductive in terms of life-saving purposes, including measures that would have resulted in the death of the child, if not already dead." End quote. The implication is that the White Helmets may have actually killed children and or were using already dead children as propaganda props. The White Helmets have been filmed describing Syrian Arab army bodies as trash, and one particular video shows them flashing V signs while standing on bodies of Syrian soldiers piled onto a truck. Many photos show White Helmet operatives carrying arms or posing armed with rebel groups, including al-Nusra Front. At least one of them, Mo'ad Barish, who was killed fighting against the Syrian army, was an active rebel or terrorist while also a member of the White Helmets. The White Helmets claim to have saved over 90,000 lives, but there is zero documentation of these lives. No names, no records of any kind. The White Helmets critics cannot be described or dismissed as comprising only fringe voices. Eminent prize-winning journalist and filmmaker John Pilger described the White Helmets as a complete propaganda construct.
There you have it. But we will continue to share the truth, even as the CIA, the National Security Agency, Obama's White House, and Hillary Clinton's Secretary of State all supported the white helmets, as did Hollywood. Lack of insight there, at a minimum. We're going to take a break and come right back. A lot of program to go. Please stay with us. There's a statement from Chris Hedges. I'd like to share this with you. This is from Truth Dig. I'm only going to do a small part. The rest is posted on our website, prn.fm, and my Facebook, Gary Nall Facebook. This is called Thought Police for the 21st Century. And it says, quote, "The abolition of net neutrality and the use of algorithms by Facebook, Google, YouTube, and Twitter to divert readers and viewers from progressive, left-wing, and anti-war sites, along with demonizing as foreign agents the journalists who expose the crimes of corporate capitalism and imperialism, have given the corporate state the power to destroy freedom of speech. Any state that accuses this, that accrues this kind of power, will use it. And for that reason, I traveled last week to Detroit to join David North, the chairperson for the International Editorial Board of the World Socialist website, and in a live stream event calling for the formation of a broad front to block an escalating censorship while we still have a voice. The quote, "The future of humanity is the struggle between humans that control machines and the machines that control humans," Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, said in a statement issued in support of the event. Quote, "Between the democratization and communication and usurpation of communication by artificial intelligence, while the internet has brought about a revolution in persons' ability to educate themselves and others, the resulting democratic phenomena has shaken existing establishment to their core. Google, Facebook, and other Chinese equivalents who are socially, logically, and financially integrated with existing elites have moved to reestablish discourse control. This is not simply a corrective action. Undetectable mass social influence powered by artificial intelligence is an existential threat to humanity. And while still in its infancy, the trends are clear and a geometric nature significant. The phenomena differs in traditional attempts to shape culture and political phenomena by operating at scale, speed, and increasingly at a subtlety that eclipses human capacities," end quote. That's Julian Assange. Now, here's what Chris Hedges says. He says, "The reductions coincided with the introduction of algorithms imposed by Google to fight fake news. Google said the algorithms are designed to evaluate more authoritative content. That means orthodoxy. That means if the federal government or an industry or a scientist associated with the federal government or any federal agency, the FDA, the USDA, National Institutes of Health, if any major corporation says something, if figures who control the Fortune 500 companies, any major media says something, it's all considered legitimate. But, and here's the rub, so please listen, if you're Truthdig, if you're Pacifica, if you are if you are Countercurrents, if you're Global Research, if you're any of the about 100 different really progressive sites, whether you're radio, television, or print, you are now going to be censored by Google, Facebook, and you're not going to allow to have a forum. It will be automatic. With this artificial intelligence, they're not going to look into your background. They don't care. If you do not support the status quo, if you do not support orthodoxy in medicine, in politics, whatever it may be, if you're a Democrat or Republican, you're considered acceptable. If you're third party or alternative, like the Greens or Constitutional Party or Justice Party, you're considered fake. So now just imagine that everyone out there on the Internet They won't even know that they're not getting stories, investigative reports, documentaries, news feeds, commentaries from legitimate incredible sources because they're not official. So they have a list of all official. And if you're not official, you don't get on the internet. That's scary. That's really not good for anyone. So I just want to share that with you. And that's what's happening now. In fact, what they're doing is the 150 most popular search terms that brought readers to the World Socialist website, including socialism and Russian Revolution and inequality, today, you get no traffic. Why? They're being censored. So if you talk about inequality, censored. Socialism, censored. Capitalism in a negative way, censored. Neoliberalism, censored. New World Order, censored. Many people have asked about Donald Trump. Well, Chris Hedges feels that he is a useful idiot. What exactly does that mean? According to Chris, the problem with Donald Trump is not that he is imbecilic and inept. It's that he has surrendered total power, something we've all observed, to the oligarchic and military elites. I just read today where he is asking for the largest military increase in American history. Tens of millions of dollars they didn't even ask for. So they get what they want. They do what they want. Although the president is a one-man wrecking crew aimed at democratic norms and institutions, although he has turned the United States into a laughingstock around the globe, our national crisis is embodied not in Trump, but the corporate state now with unfettered pillage. And Trump, who has no inclination or ability to govern, has handed the machinery of government over to the bankers and the corporate executives we talked about a lot on this program, the right-wing think tanks, intelligence chief, and the generals. They are eradicating the few regulations and laws that inhibited a naked kleptocracy. They are dynamiting the institutions, including the State Department, that served interest other than the corporate profit, and are stacking the courts with right-wing, corporate-controlled ideologues. Trump provides the daily entertainment. The elites handle the business of looting and exploiting and destroying. Now, I'm sure you've all noticed this. The headlines are about what stupid thing he tweeted about, or his manners, or something that he did wrong. When did they discuss what it's like living in Libya today? The largest open slave trading in the world in Libya. That's their creation. When did they discuss how they got it wrong on invading Syria and regime change in Libya and in the Ukraine? And where are all the original investigative reports showing how Hillary and our State Department and the CIA undermined democracy in Honduras or elsewhere? Where is there any discussion about taking away the water and clean food and clean air acts that were there to protect us all this time? No, you're not going to see it. And once democratic institutions are hollowed out, a process begun before the election of Trump, despotism is inevitable. The press is shackled. Corruption and theft take place on a massive scale. The rights and needs of citizens are irrelevant. Dissent is criminalized. Militarized police monitor and seize and detain Americans without probable cause. The rituals of democracy become farce. This is the road that we are traveling. And it's a road that leads to internal collapse and tyranny. And we are way down that road. I've discussed in the past how we are now faced with the following irreversible conditions. Climate change. The last important interview I did on this with was Guy McPherson recently. I didn't broadcast it. I called him on the phone. I have a chapter in a new book on the environment, and I wanted to get an update. And he said we have less than 10 years to go before the effects of the loss of Arctic ice warms the ocean so much which then increases the threat of storms, big storms, to a degree that many parts of the world will not be able to be habitable. We're already seeing this. Look at California. Look at Florida. Look at Louisiana and several other places in the United States. Not to be remiss, look at around the world right now. Cataclysmic events are not even reported anymore. It's not considered that important. On top of that, look at a complete bubble of an economy. Look at the gross disparity between incomes of those who have and those who have not. You've got professional class of 17 million. You've got millionaires of 10 million. That's 27 million people who can buy things. One's paying with it through debt. The other can use disposable income. But it means we have a very, very select privileged class that gets all the attention, and the middle class and the working class get no attention. And then we have massive disease. So with our environmental health in turmoil, our personal health in dire need of help, and our financial systems with gross disparity, where do you think all this leads? The elite's moral and intellectual vacuum produced Trump. As I said earlier in this program, the unions, rank and file, not the union leadership, which is frequently self-serving, but the rank and file in many states trusted the Clintons. They were betrayed with NAFTA and the World Trade Organization. They trusted Obama. And that was a mistake. As a result, after 16 years of trust and nothing done for them, they voted for Trump, many of them. So if you want to talk about why Hillary lost, look at what the Democratic Party, the neo-fascist party today, along with the Republican neo-fascist party, did to the trust of people. These are the elites. These are the moralizers. They are slicker than he at selling the lies and more adept at disguising their greed through absurd ideologies such as neoliberalism, globalization. They belong to the same criminal class and share many of the pathologies that characterize Trump. The grotesque visage of Trump is the true face of politicians such as George Bush and Bill and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. The Clintons and Obama, unlike Bush and Trump, are self-aware and therefore cynical, but all lack a moral compass. It was Michael Wolff who wrote in Fire and Fury, inside the Trump White House, the president has no scruples. He lives outside the rules and is contemptuous of them. And this makes him identical to those he had replaced, no different. A close Trump friend, who was also a good Bill Clinton friend, found them eerily similar, except that Clinton had the respectful front and Trump did not, says Wolff. Well, in conclusion, Trump, backed by the most retrograde elements of corporate capitalism, including Robert Rebecca Mercer and Sheldon Adelson and Carl Icahn, is the fool who prances at the front of our death march. As natural resources become scarce and the wealth of empire evaporates, a shackled population will be forced to work harder for less. State revenues will be squandered in grandiose projects and feudal wars in an attempt to return the empire to a mythical golden age. The decision to slash corporate tax rates for the rich while increasing an already bloated military budget by $54 billion is typical of decayed civilizations. Empires expand beyond their capacity to sustain themselves and then go bankrupt. Sumerian, Egyptian, Greek, Roman, Mayan, Khmer, Ottoman, Austro-Hungarian empires all imploded in a similar fashion. So the lesson of history is clear. But history, yes, unfortunately, is not benefited by the illiterate charlatans who seize power in the dying days of empire because they know nothing of history. They are driven by a primal and incohute lust for wealth, one that is never satisfied no matter how many billions they possess. The elites in dying cultures turn everything into a commodity. Human beings are commodities. The natural world is a commodity. Government and democratic institutions are commodities. All are mixed. All are mined. All are wrecked. All are raped for profit. Nothing has an intrinsic value. Nothing is sacred. The relentless and suicidal drive to accumulate greater and greater wealth by destroying the systems that sustain life is adultery. It ignores the biblical injunction that idols always begin by demanding human sacrifice and end by demanding self-sacrifice. The elites are not only building our funeral pyre, they are building their own. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day. And stay tuned for Utrice Lead coming at you right now.